is England versus the United States, Mr. Anderson.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Ryan Anderson, and I'm here on behalf of appellant Robert England. This case boils down to when does a takings claim accrue for under Section 2501 for purposes of the six-year limitations. And really what it comes down to, the case law says it's very consistent, that a claim accrues when the plaintiff, or when the events have occurred which fix the liability of the government, and the plaintiff knew or should have known of the existence of such events. That much is very consistent throughout the case law. Where it gets difficult is the should have known prong. And the government in their brief calls it a separate prong. Reasonable diligence is something that the Court of Federal Claims used.
Do you agree that the should have known standard is fairly encompassed or encapsulated by the two-part test of either concealment by the defendant or inherently unknowable information by the plaintiff?
No. I don't think it is. It's a
fairly standard formulation, but you challenge it.
Absolutely standard. You see it sprinkled throughout, but in most of the case law, or much of the case law, you then see it boil down to this reasonable, diligent landowner. And I think we would be better served by just going to reasonably diligent landowner. In this case, since it's a property case, a property owner. Because I think reasonable diligence is the standard. The problem, I think, with fraudulent concealment really isn't a should have known, because it's more of a the party would have known, but for the facts were concealed.
Do you think it matters that Mr. Ingram lived in Boston, as opposed to living, let's say, in Presidio?
I think it can. If you're looking at the diligence, I think it can. And here's where I think it ties in. Here's where I think it ties in. Mr. Ingram is 15 hours removed from his property. And I say in the brief, I've got a typo where I say 10. The record's very clear, it's 15. Not that that really matters. But I do think that diligence or reasonableness could change what is required depending on whether you are next door to the property, because
so the statute of limitations would depend on whether he lived in Boston or Burkina Faso.
I think that the should have known requirement could hinge on that or could be affected. And here's
or if he were averse to travel.
Well, that may be, it's an objective standard.
But objective reasonableness with respect to the particular situation of the plaintiff, which is what I hear you saying. That's why I say, if he's averse to travel, that may be a condition of the plaintiff.
Sure.
He can't travel.
And it's an interesting balance, because we call it an objective standard, but in reality, we're looking at what is, we've got to have some objective test. And what I think it is sort of analogous to a standard of care that you see in a medical malpractice case, that there are certain factors that ought to be considered. And then when we're doing this fact-intensive investigation, which it is necessarily fact-intensive, so it is going to tie back to the individual situation, we are going to have to apply that situation to the objective standard.
The site of the taking was 100 feet from the road, very easily viewable according to the record.
Mm-hmm.
Why doesn't that impeach somewhat your argument that this was not reasonably knowable?
Because you've got to get to that point. And therein lies part of the problem in this particular case. When the government goes in and repairs a road and renders that road unusable for much of the year, and it's occasionally usable. I'm not saying it's good ever. But right, I agree, it is a long period of time. And the evidence shows that Mr. Ingram, on several occasions, traveled down there and could not get into the lane. And I do think, in the abstract, you could look at that and you could say, well, he should have found it somewhere. He should have done what he eventually did once someone had told him hey, did you see what they did to your hillside? He still couldn't drive in that day. In fact, the day that he was told that, he had tried to access his property. He couldn't get in there. Then he is told that, so he later goes back. And he has to hike in a mile and a half over very difficult terrain to get there. But
how far is it? Well, go ahead.
Okay, I was going to say, but I think what's important there is, at that point, once he had been told, you know what, someone damaged your land, he had a reasonably diligent landowner would go further, would do more than try to drive onto his land. Up until that point in time, he had this incredibly remote piece of land that he tried to access, he couldn't access, and he had no reason to believe.
He knew that the government was working on his road. I mean, I have a house in North Carolina, it's a 5-hour drive. If I hire a contractor to do work on that house, you know, I follow up. I go back and I look. I don't trust that he did everything perfectly without any fault. I don't wait 6 years and then go take a look. Why wouldn't that put him on notice? He knew they were going to go onto his land to repair the road. How else do you think they were going to repair the road? In that area of the country, it doesn't seem to be reasonable to expect they were bringing dump trucks full of dirt in. He's got thousands and thousands of acres sitting there full of dirt. So why doesn't all of that put him on notice?
Because previously, when the government had come in to repair the road, they had filled out the right of entry permit that specifically allowed them to take materials from the land. That was not filled out in this situation, and the government agrees that they didn't have a right to take it.
We're not arguing about whether or not there would have been a meritorious claim had you filed within the requisite time. We're talking about whether or not he should have known. I mean, wouldn't a prudent, normal landowner, when work is done on their home, verify at some point within 6 years that the work was done properly and didn't do harm to their land?
I think that Mr. Ingram should be permitted to rely on the limited right of entry that he gave. To compare it to your contractor, you're talking about looking at the contractor's actual work. In this situation, Mr. Ingram didn't sue for the shoddy road construction work that he knew was shoddy.
No, you know, actually, most of the time when contractors come to my house to fix something, they actually fix the thing right, they just mess something else up along the way. I think that's pretty much a common occurrence. And so I'm usually, when they're moving a new fridge in, looking at the stairwell for nicks in the walls. You know, I'm not worried that the fridge isn't going to work.
But that's inherent in getting that refrigerator in. And while I agree with you that the government, it would put quite a burden on the government to haul materials in. And that's, I mean, it's reasonable to infer that that's exactly why they did not, why they cut up the hill.
Well, they had done that before he bought the land, if I'm not mistaken. They had previously worked on the road, and they had taken fill from the borrow pit, right?
Yes.
And he knew that.
Yeah, I think so.
Right.
It's
so
not
what, it would be very surprising to me that you wouldn't have at least expected that there was a pretty good chance that they would do the same, absent some strict direction to the contrary, which isn't in the record.
But the form
doesn't indicate that he told them, do not take crap from the road.
In the prior example that you're talking about, the government had specifically been given permission to do that. And so I think there's a reason. Here, they weren't given permission to do that.
The form wasn't filled out either way. I mean, he could have circled do not, and he didn't. True, it wasn't circled to say do, but there certainly wasn't any unambiguous prohibition such that since what we're talking about is Judge Morse's, is not whether something was done wrong, but whether the time should be suspended for accrual. Right? It would seem to me that based on record materials that we have, he was at least on inquiry as to whether something would have been done at the borrow pit as it was done in the repair that was done the year before he purchased the property in the same way.
But both parties agree they didn't have a right to take the property. I'm not going to the merits, but both of them interpret that non-filled out part of the form to mean the exact same thing, and that is they don't have permission to do it. So absent some indication, I mean, if the government violated that and they told him, hey, we did this, we need permission, there might be something that would give him cause to do it, to go investigate further and undertake it, just to undertake the arduous investigation task. And that's what I'm thinking. What I think is the difference here is something's got to put the landowner on notice.
Well, but this road only crosses 2 3/4 miles of his property, right? So
yes.
Why isn't it reasonable to impose on the landowner a duty to inspect at least that little amount of his property, particularly when he does know that it's under construction?
If he tried to. He tried to enter the road and he couldn't. And so his option, and I'm into my rebuttal time, but I do want to address this point. The option was to get out of his car and hike the 1.5 miles in, which is exactly what he did once he'd been told what had happened, or this alternative route. And one thing I want to clarify, because the government in their brief says, it's a road, he could have gone by car. If the court looks at page 163 of the appendix, which shows the map, that road ends at Candelaria. This is not
The paved portion of the road ends at Candelaria.
Right. I mean, this is...
But then it continues as a dirt gravel road for all the way to Chisborough. Right?
Hey, exactly. But, I mean, this is not a dirt road, like a smooth... You crawl along at 5 to 10 miles an hour.
How many miles is it from Candelaria to the beginning of this property? I thought about 4 miles.
It's about 4 miles.
And a lot of that is traversable. The only place you run into a problem, I guess, is where the creek or the washout comes through, the bog, I think it's called.
The bog. Yes.
Right, and that's right on the edge of his property, right?
That is right inside his property.
Okay, so from the bog, you could park right next to the bog. You can get to the bog, no problem. The bog is the problem. So you walk, 1.5 miles into his property before you get to the borrow pit.
Right.
So really, access was paved roads all the way to 4 miles from his property, at which point you have 4 miles of pretty good road, followed by, at most, even in bad weather, 1.5 miles hike.
Correct.
That doesn't seem to define inaccessibility in my sense of it.
I think once you get to that point, are you going to get out and hike this rough terrain, or are you going to turn around and wait until the road becomes passable? When you have no reason to suspect that the government, I guess I just disagree, and maybe this is something the court is going to hold and explain, but I disagree. If the idea is, look, if the government goes on your property, even under a limited right of entry, then you have to suspect that they probably damaged your property. If that's the whole thing?
Well, let me ask you another question. Do you think that the limitations period accrued in 2004 when Lupe informed Mr. Ingram of what had happened on the land, or was it in 2005 when Ingram went on to the property?
It's a couple of months difference.
It's a year's difference.
Well, no, I mean, actually, it's November or December of 2004 and then February of 2005.
I thought it was early 2004 when you ran into Lupe.
No, the record...
Okay, it doesn't matter.
That's okay. I've only got 1.5 minutes left. Can I reserve that for rebuttal, or are there more questions you'd like? Okay, thank you.
We'll restore Mr. Ingram's rebuttal time, and if you'd give an extra 4 minutes to Mr. Stockman if he needs to use it.
May it please the court, my name is Robert Stockman, and I'm here on behalf of the United States. We ask this court to affirm the trial court's dismissal of Mr. Ingram's claim as barred by Section 2501. The sole argument raised by Mr. Ingram in his brief was that this claim should not have accrued when it occurred because it was inherently unknowable. The Court of Federal Claims correctly denied that.
He's challenging, by his argument, the inherently unknowable standard, or at least its application beyond to the extent that it's inconsistent with a reasonable diligence standard.
I think at this point he is, Your Honor. I would say, though, that under the precedent of this court in Martinez, there's simply two ways of articulating the same standard. The court in Martinez discussed the need that normally it accrues when all events occur, but that it doesn't accrue when it is inherently unknowable or the government concealed it. And then it goes on to say, well, that means that the claim accrues when a person knows or reasonably should have known that the claim accrued. I read Martinez to suggest...
Why can't there be some inference of concealment here when they did take it and didn't notify him that they're taking it in the first place, and in the second place they know that if accessible, it's accessible through difficulty?
Well, Your Honor, first, the plaintiff didn't allege concealment, but I would go on to say that in this case, they did ask for permission to go onto the property. He gave that permission. He failed to fill out this form on whether or not...
Usually when you're going to take something off the property, you ask permission.
I believe that's the case, Your Honor.
And that wasn't done, so that kind of forms a cloud over the whole affair.
Your Honor,
and then you know that it's going to be difficult for him to discover it. Why isn't that getting close to concealment?
I don't believe there's any sign of concealment because here, first, the taking itself is readily visible. It's a 20-foot high, 35,000 square foot pit. If they'd meant to conceal it, they wouldn't have put it readily visible from the road. Moreover, I think concealment is an after the fact kind of analysis. It goes to whether or not the government has taken any kind of proactive efforts to hide it. Here, at best, a mistake may have been made, but that doesn't suggest the government took any steps to conceal it further. When he contacted the U.S. Border Patrol, which continued to use the road throughout this time period, and asked, is it passable or not? More often than not, the Border Patrol found it passable, and they informed him when it was passable. That's being reasonably helpful. That's helping Mr. Ingram access his property. That's the opposite of concealment, Your Honor. I'd also say that the right of entry itself includes a comment that the government will be held responsible for damages. And I think that reflects a reality, that construction can involve damages. It can result in mistakes. Even the government makes mistakes. And so the right of entry put him on notice that damages might result from this construction, and a reasonable inquiry following up on that would be for, at a minimum, the plaintiff to have gone to his property, to walk or drive along his road, observing to see any damages, and he concedes that if he had done that at any point, he would have seen this pit. So a reasonable person should have known of it, and I don't believe there's any sign that the government took any steps to conceal it. I'd say that the most, even assuming that the government had in some way made it more difficult to access it or had in some way not been, he had misread the government's actions, this court has never suggested that would amount to concealment. I'd like to go on to say that this is an open and notorious taking. I mean, it's a 20-foot high, 35,000 square shearing from a hillside. It's readily visible. In Fulcher, the Fourth Circuit held that a property owner is expected to know about what happens on his property, lest the statute of limitations run indefinitely. This court has repeatedly held that this is an objective standard in Fellini, in Coastal Petroleum, and Martinez suggests that.
What is the, whenever you have an objective standard, it's objective vis-a-vis what starting point? Objective for somebody that lives in Candelaria? Objective for somebody that lives in Presidio 50 miles away? Objective for somebody who lives in Austin? Or what? I mean, there may be different levels.
Burkina Faso.
Are we talking about objective with respect to the reasonableness of the inquiry done by this individual?
No, I don't believe the court has ever tried to inquire.
And what would you say should we be looking at? Would it be, you would think somebody lives in Candelaria, it would be reasonable for them to be out there pretty frequently.
Well, I think in the context of real property, we expect people to take efforts to know about their property. And if they invest in remote property from them, they can always hire an agent to observe it. They could ask their neighbor to go observe it. We ask them to take some steps. We expect people, when they have a valuable property interest, to take some steps to remain aware about what has occurred on their property interest. So I don't think we need to be overly concerned about any individual living far or close to his property. Moreover, this court's never drawn those types of lines. It's always simply asked, was this discoverable? Would a person who was on notice that something might happen as he was here have gone and taken steps that would have led to the discovery? And here, there's no question that's the case.
Well, your position would seem to be that it's discoverable as long as it would be possible for anyone to discover it, even if there were no road toward the bar pit, and this were way up in the hills, in a place that it could only be found if you flew over it, let's say.
Well, you could tell us, the Court of Federal Claims actually applied that standard. They said the damage wasn't readily visible, the property was remote, it was only accessible by helicopter overflight or by driving and hiking into the property, and yet they still held that the property owner was on notice, he was on inquiry, that he should have discovered this taking. So I think in that case, it still is reasonably discoverable, but that isn't this case. This is a far more straightforward case, where when someone knows that the government is going to be on their property and engaging in the type of activity that might result in injury, they're required to at least do the kind of inquiry expected under those circumstances. So I think that...
Inquiry expected under those circumstances. Now, what do you mean by that?
I guess...
I'm suggesting to you that flying over at a very high altitude, let's say over a 3,300-acre, it's a lot of territory, a 3,300-acre ranch, to see if there's been any disturbance of the property is not something that everyone would be likely to do. You're not suggesting that any disturbance, even miles from the road, would be something that would fall within the realm of what people would normally be expected to do by way of checking up on the property.
Well, I think it's a question that has to be answered based on the facts of each case. I hesitate to speculate. In this case, I think it would have been revealed. Different cases pose different burdens, and what is reasonably expected is that someone remain just knowledgeable about the property and take steps to know about what's occurring on it.
It seems to me, counsel, that you're asking for a rule that is far broader than what you need to, so let me make sure I understand. Don't the facts of this case suggest that in the previous repair of the road, the government did so by removing sand, gravel, and dirt, and a reasonable person would not expect them necessarily in this construction effort to bring in dump trucks full, even though the box wasn't checked on the form?
Yes, Your Honor.
So it seems to me that you have a more narrow factual circumstance here, and you don't need to argue for the "you always have the duty to look" in every case kind of standard.
I think that's true, Your Honor, and I wouldn't attempt to articulate what exactly a reasonable person does in every circumstance. And I'll try not to attempt to articulate it. I believe this court tries to formulate that question with things like the inherently unknowable standard and with things like the is it concealed. That's an attempt to see what would objectively a person wouldn't know. But it's certainly true that this case doesn't require the court to go that far. I believe the Court of Federal Claims did a very good job of laying out all the reasons that this plaintiff was on inquiry that he might suffer damages. It had been removed before. That he knew they were doing construction, he knew damages might occur, and that if he had taken any steps to discover it, he would have discovered it.
Do you know by any chance, this wasn't for you, but I'll ask anyway, if in adverse possession law, the requirement that the possession of the adverse party has to be open, notorious, and hostile has within it the notion that the other party is not required to investigate the open, notorious, and hostile possession if it is not in a place where he would reasonably be expected to visit.
I'm not sure how that plays out in Texas law, Your Honor, though I did do some research into this. And my understanding is that there isn't an inquiry into whether that person, the person whose property it once was, did research. The question is whether it was open and notorious generally, whether it was the type of thing that someone would have discovered.
So, where I'm going, I think that in Texas, the adverse possession is 10 years for this kind of property. So if there isn't a suspension of the 10-year period in Texas law for hostile possession, then presumably the passage of 2 more years and somebody could have just set up shop out there, marked off 160 acres, and Mr. Ingram would be out of luck, right?
I believe that's right, Your Honor. Though that isn't this case, but I believe
I understand. Right. It seems curious because his theory is that the limitations period didn't begin until either 04 or 05, which would make for a total of 11 years, which means that that would be longer than the adverse possession limitations period in Texas.
That does appear to be his theory, and I don't believe that could possibly be correct, Your Honor. And I think that is another problem with his argument. However, it's also the case that Section 2501, it's further also problematic because this court has repeatedly held that it's not an issue of the practical burdens that face a unique plaintiff. And I mean, in Hoplin Band of Pomo Indians, this court specifically faced plaintiffs that said that the government's mistakes and inactions had made it more difficult for them to bring their claim. But the court said, well, you could have brought it. And the six-year period reflects a congressional determination about what is a reasonable period of time for someone to overcome practical burdens in discovering. So I think that is another problem with the plaintiff's argument. But I think that at the end of the day, the six-year period is the federal period, and it runs from the moment that it should have been discovered by someone. And in this case, he was on inquiry. He knew that it was that there was construction and that injury might occur. Finally, I would just like to say that I think this falls well within the rules set out by the Court of Claims in Coastal Petroleum, where once a person is on notice that there would be an injury to their property, or there might be if the government is doing a project on the property, they have some responsibility to go follow up. So I think that this court, I would ask this court to affirm because it falls well within the circuit's precedent. If there are any further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Stockman.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Anderson, you have 5 minutes. Mr. Anderson, doesn't your position really eliminate the statute of limitations for difficult to access property?
No.
What if Lupe hadn't shown up for 20 years or 30 years? You'd essentially say there's no statute of limitations till it's discovered, right?
Not necessarily. And try and figure out what kind of objective.
Well, what is your rule then?
Here's the rule that I would propose. I would propose that the should have known, the reasonable diligence test depends on, first, do events occur of which the property owner is deemed to have notice, such as some sort of public record, property record filing. That's the Catellus case. The big difference in Catellus is they had a condemnation proceeding back in 1952.
Of course, the difficulty you might have there is that this had occurred earlier, and you were aware that there was going to be construction on your property. So there is some form of notice.
Absolutely. And this
but go ahead with what you think your rule is.
Okay. So I think you first look if there's deemed notice, and that would put you on inquiry. I think the second thing is you look at, are there events that occur that would raise some suspicion? And I think that gets to the
see, whenever there's difficult to access property, you're not going to have those circumstances. It's not going to be easy for the public to know what's going on there.
It is going to be more difficult.
And therefore, no statute of limitations until Lupe shows up, right? 20, 30, 50 years later?
Well, I think that all goes into the sort of the calculus, if you will, of what a reasonably diligent landowner is required to do. And kind of touching on Judge Bryson's question regarding adverse possession. And it's been a few years since I've done an adverse possession appeal. I think remote land, and correct me if you've looked at this figure statute, I think it's 25 years for really remote land.
I could be wrong. When I found, I admittedly, a quick look was
okay.
10 years.
Because I know there's 10,
shorter
15, years 25.
For different kinds of property, but 10 seems to be the longest. But that's at the. I did do a thorough research.
But I think what's important there, adverse possession also has a fundamentally different policy behind it. Adverse possession, especially in Texas, I don't know, other areas that this circuit deals with, but in Texas, it is encouraging the productive use of land. So if there's land that's essentially abandoned and someone's using it for productive means, since we've got so much land down there, if someone's going to use it, we want to reward them and protect their use of it. So that's why they will cut off claims there. But it's got to be open and notorious in a way that...
Well, but does it also have to be undiscoverable? Does it have to be discoverable? Is there an exception, in other words, for undiscoverable? If Lupe, for example, in 2004, instead of walking into Candelaria and telling Mr. Ingram about this, had set up shop on the land and had been there since 99, would he have had an adverse possession right, regardless of the difficulty Mr. Ingram had in reaching the property?
If he continually occupied
right,
the
continually
land.
Continually adverse and hostile.
Right.
Towards.
And you know what they usually require on these rural lands is you've got to fence it in, or you've got to build
it. He did all that, but the land was equally inaccessible to Mr. Ingram. Would
yes.
Mr. Ingram have lost his
yes.
Life?
You could lose an adverse possession claim on that. And I think you know where the distinction would have to be there is it is just a fundamentally different policy underlying that. But back to this standard of care, you know, these events that occur, and this is something where I guess just factually, you know, based on your question, there just may be disagreement, because I think an event occurs and you look at, okay, they previously took materials from the property, but I would say it is absolutely distinguishable where they specifically had permission to do so, and here they didn't. And they both agreed they didn't have permission to do it. And I think that makes a big difference. I think the landowner ought to be able to rely on the fact that the government didn't get permission to do it.
Now, he would have been in time, I guess, if he had sued when Lupe told him about the problem, or even when he later went onto the property in 05.
Had he sued immediately, yes, he would have been within the 6 years. And I think that's a difficult fact. I agree with you. I would just ask the court, and I'm over time, so I will wrap it up in 2 seconds or a little longer, but I think that the standard ought to be clarified. I think this reasonable diligence is the proper standard. I think the court can do it, and I think under these facts, I think Mr. Ingram was reasonably diligent because he tried to get onto the land, and once he was given notice...
Thank you, Mr. Anderson.
Thank you very much.